This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is Relic Radio Show. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday for another hour or so of old-time radio. We'll begin this week with an episode from the Mole Mystery Theater, although this version is part of the Mystery Playhouse Armed Forces Radio Service. The episode's titled A Crime to Fit the Punishment, first aired December 5th, 1944. Then it's Incredible But True and a little quickie called Voice of the Dead. We'll finish off with The Key, an episode from 1956 titled Showgirl Murdered.
You. Yes, you. Are you one of those people who like to know the answer? Have you a logical and analytic nature? Does murder and the mystery fascinate you? It does, huh? Well, get out the magnifying glass, Sherlock. I think it's time for a crime. Yes, sure. This is Peter Lorre opening again the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. And tonight, we bring a detective mystery, and you're all invited to try to solve it, along with another amateur dick, a guy named Jonathan Pierce. Mr. Pierce earns his 3 squares a day selling antiques, but his real love is criminology. A hobby that seems to make his life anything but dull. Well, let's give Mr. Pierce a run for his hobby, huh? So, let's try and beat him to the solution of tonight's mystery. Clues will be all there. So let's look alike now, mate, and get the answers to a crime to fit the punishment.
Our scene opens in the antique shop of Jonathan Pierce. With him is a friend, Betty Hughes.
Look, Jonathan, why don't you give up this antique shop and become a full-fledged private detective? After all, you've been very successful. Besides, I'm yearning for a life of excitement and mystery.
Meaning?
Meaning I'll be your assistant.
Nothing doing. If I need an assistant, it won't be a woman. Hmm. You'd probably faint the first time a mug said boo at you.
Faint? Well, I'd faint if that was a thing to do.
Some other time here comes a customer.
Young man, are you Jonathan Pierce?
I am. What can I do for you, sir?
That's what I'm here to find out. Who's the young lady?
Oh, this is...
Never mind answering. I was young once myself. Pierce, I want to hire your services as a private detective.
Well, how did you know that?
I'm David Warlock. You call Warlock Tycoon filthy with money. All the Warlocks are. So I'm able to pay well.
Well, that's very nice,
my son, Freddy, is about to be blackmailed. Actually, my adopted son. His father was my business partner before he died, and he knew Freddy was a weak-willed lad, so he wanted me to look after him and his inheritance. It goes by my name now, and I won't stand for blackmail.
Blackmail? Do you have any...
Don't interrupt, Pierce. Not through yet. Freddy's been playing around with a young lady named Rita Date, a gambler by the name of Lance Norman. Nothing wrong with women and gambling. Like both myself. But these two are bad ones.
Oh, and you think they're blackmailing your son? Your adopted son?
Going to blackmail him, or rather me.
Well, how's that?
Well, it amounts to blackmailing him. But they have to come to me because I still control his inheritance. Are you a detective, young lady?
Why, no.
Well, then don't ask questions and waste my time.
Mr. Warlock, what did you mean by saying that they're going to blackmail you?
Well, I had a phone call yesterday, just after I got back from Mortonville. from uptown. Mysterious voice said he had something concerning my son which he wanted to sell. Didn't identify himself, but said he'd call again in a day or two.
I see. Well, you'll give me a free hand in dealing with this blackmailer?
Completely. Now, Pierce, here's a $500 retainer.
Oh?
I want you to come to my house, meet my son, and the two I suspect of being back to this blackmail scheme. I'll drive you up.
All right. Oh, but there is one more question, sir, I've been trying to ask since you came in here. How did you come to hire me? I suppose it's because you heard of my reputation in solving a few little crimes that baffled the police.
On the contrary, have I heard anything like that?
Oh.
Take a bow, Sherlock.
Quiet character. Well, then, well, why, Mr. Warlock?
Well, I always liked the name of Pierce. I once was in love with a woman named Pierce 30 years ago. Always hired people named Pierce since then. Chauffeur's name's Pierce, butler's name's Pierce, gardener's name's Pierce.
Oh, it sounds very logical to me.
It would to you.
Now, Jonathan, I want you to come over to my house and size up the situation. Are you ready to go?
Oh, I'll say we are.
Not you, young lady. You're staying here.
Now, listen here, Jonathan Pierce. I'm going to hate you if you turn to one of those big, stronger woman's places in the home, men.
Goodbye, dear. Just use some of that slow burn to keep the home fires cooking.
Well, this is my little home, Jonathan, my boy. That was Pierce who let it in.
Oh.
I imagine that we'll find Freddy and his friends in the library, so come.
Right.
I'll leave you with them for a few minutes so you can size them up.
Well, how are you going to explain me to them, Mr. Warlock?
Oh, don't worry about that. And then here we are. Well, good afternoon, everybody. I want you all to meet a young friend of mine, Mr. Jonathan Pierce. Jonathan, this is Miss Peter Dane, Sir Lance Norman, and my son, Freddy Warlock. I'll leave you to get acquainted. Goodbye.
Well.
Not so well. It would seem that Mr. Warlock does not exactly possess the delicate touch.
He is screwy. Who are you, Tim?
Oh, I thought you knew. Well, I'm Jonathan Pierce, and you're Lance Norman, the Lido Club, fast gambling for fast people.
And what do you do? You don't look like a bodyguard or a keyhole snooper.
Oh, I haunt houses. I've just been hired to haunt this one.
A wise guy. Every time a guy starts talking wise like that, you want to watch him. He's liable to start lifting the silverware.
Now, you look here, Pierce. Did my father hire you to snoop on us? He's always hiring people named Pierce. Well, if he did, you might as well know I'm going to marry Rita whether he wants me to or not. All I got to do is wait another 6 months. Then I get all my own dough and I can do just as I please, see?
Oh, don't bother explaining to him, Freddy doll.
Now, look, both of you keep quiet and let me handle this. Look, chum, I don't like the way the old man dumped you in here and walked off. What's the payoff?
Well, we might as well get everything straight. I'm an antique dealer.
Whose hobby is playing detective, huh?
Something like that.
A shameless, huh? Gee, they're even getting private cops now who wear neckties.
I thought I smelled copper when you walked in.
Well, get this, cop. These two kids are in love. They're floating on the clouds.
I'm not surprised. The kid's breath has enough alcohol on it to make me float on the clouds, too.
I suppose the old man pays you for being funny. Anyway, these kids can't live without each other, see? So just keep your nose out of the picture, or it might get stepped on.
How touching. And I suppose you're the marriage broker, or maybe you're just here to chaperone them.
Well, what is it, Pierce?
I beg your pardon, but Mr. Warlock would like to see Mr. Jonathan Pierce in his den immediately.
Oh, thank you, Pierce. I'll be seeing you later, lad.
I can hardly wait, Seamus.
You wanted to see me, Mr. Warlock?
Yes, Duncan. Here on the telephone. It's the blackmailer I told you about.
Oh.
Pierce recognized it as the same voice as called yesterday, and I wanted you to listen in on my conversation with him. You can use that extension over there.
Oh, all right.
Hello? This is Warlock speaking.
This is the same pair that called you yesterday, Warlock. I got a little piece of paper about your son that the police would like to get their fingers on. But I, might be willing to sell it.
Eh? How much?
$5,000. Do you want to talk about it, or do I go to the cops?
No. I'll talk about it. I won't meet to myself, but I'll send someone I can trust. You name the place.
Okay. Send a guy to 4527 Fernando Place. Tell him to ring the bell under the name of Clip Matson. I'll let him in. If he's got the $5,000, we'll talk.
Are you Mr. Matson?
Never mind who I am. Just do as I say. And Warlock.
Yes.
Don't try any fancy stuff. Your son will end up in a big house. But tell a guy to hurry up.
You heard him, Jonathan?
Yes.
I've got $5,000 right here, and you'll take it with you. I leave it up to your judgment as to whether to give it to him or not. But remember one thing.
What's that?
If Lance Norman and Rita Dane are back at least, as I suspect they are, I'll pay any amount over and above this to pin it on them. Now, you go see this Cliff Manson and see what you can do.
Yeah? What do you want?
Are you Clip Matson?
Maybe I am, and maybe I ain't. What are you selling, Matt?
My name is Jonathan Pierce. I'm representing David Warlock.
Oh, okay, I'm Matson. Come in. Did you bring the dough?
Maybe. First, I want to see what you're offering to sell. And while you're at it, Matson, maybe you'd like to make another $5,000 all for yourself.
What do you mean?
I mean that the name of the man who's working this with you is worth another $5,000 to you.
I don't know what you're talking about, Mac. There ain't nobody in this with me.
Huh?
I just found this information I'm offering to sell, that's all.
Well, they tell me it gets awfully lonesome up in Sing Sing.
Now, wait a minute, Mac. You don't want to talk like that to me. I might get scared and decide I ought to turn this over to the cops. Maybe I ought, anyway.
Suit yourself. We're really more interested in getting the name of the man back of you than in anything else. I might be able to raise the price a little.
But I tell you... Hey, what's your idea walking in here, mister?
What's going on? Oh!
You suck Pierce. What's your idea? Okay. Okay, I got my hands up.
Hey!
Take it easy with that gun.
No!
Oh.
Jonathan! Jonathan, wake up!
Oh.
Jonathan!
What? Oh, hello.
Hello.
So this is what heaven's like.
Now, stop that, Jonathan. Are you hurt?
No, Betty, no. Outside of a lump on my head. Oh! Oh, boy, it could serve as a road marker. A headache and a certain loss of pride, I feel fine, just fine. Ah. Did Clip Matson get away?
I don't think so. There's a man over here on the floor, but I haven't asked him his name because he's dead.
Dead? But how?
Oh, I'm not up on these things, Johnson, but I imagine the two bullet holes in him have something to do with it.
Bullet holes? Oh, I remember now. I sort of heard two shots just as I was drifting out of this world. Onto the nose. Here, let's see. Yeah, that's Clip Matson, all right. But why?
Well, maybe somebody didn't like him.
Oh, you're a big help. By the way, what are you doing here? I thought I left you at the store.
Well, you did, darling, but you see, I'm the type that feels men need looking after,
oh.
So I followed you. First to Warlock, and then here, and you ought to be grateful.
Well, it's touching to know that someone is interested in whether I'm alive or dead.
Jonathan, what happened?
I was talking to Clip there. He was the guy who was trying to blackmail Warlock. Suddenly, somebody came in the door behind me.
The murderer!
Exactly, my dear Watson. I started to turn around, and the guy slugged me.
Huh.
All I got a chance to see was a hand wearing a gray glove and the barrel of a gun that was rapidly nearing my head. That's the last I remember, except for the two shots. Boy, some detective I turned out to be.
Oh, well, don't be too hard on yourself, Jonathan. It could have happened to anyone.
Yeah, sure, but it happened to me. All right, come on, we've got to give this apartment a fast once-over to see if we can find that paper Matson wanted to sell. You take that side, I'll take this side.
Finished my side, and I found nothing incriminating, except to your Clip Matson.
He's not my Clip Matson. I drew a blank here, except for one thing. A check signed by Lance Norman.
Lance who?
Lance Norman. That's the gambler Warlock thinks is back of the blackmailing. All right, come on. We're going to see Mr. Lance Norman at the Lido Club.
But I haven't got my chips with me.
This is the club lead, I'll bet, hey? If you look around you, you'll see half the elite of our city busily engaged in losing their shirts to Lance Norman.
Well, very exciting, Jonathan.
Well, well, hello there, Pierce.
Why, Lance, hello.
Well, is this a business visit or a social one?
Oh, let's call it a business visit, shall we? Is there some place that I can talk to you?
Why not? Come on in my office, Pierce.
Oh, no, thank you.
Come on, you'll be just as safe in here as out on the floor.
Safer, probably. I don't seem to be any wheels in here.
You know, your sense of humor is going to kill me someday. If it doesn't kill you first. Does the check have a name?
Oh, of course, my
name...
Not
to you, Lance, no. Do you know a Clip Matson?
I might. And I might not.
He probably did a lot of odd jobs for you. Such as... blackmail.
I don't need any sideline as long as I have this club. It pays off very nicely.
Clip had one of your checks, which he hadn't cashed.
Well, I write a lot of checks.
Jonathan, he talks exactly like the gamblers in the movies.
Well, I like a dame with nerve. Anytime you get tired of that dumb Seamus, come around and see me, sweetheart.
Well, maybe I will.
If you do, it'll be on a visiting day, and you'll have to talk to him through bars.
Not this week, Seamus. Look. If you've got any more questions to ask, get them over with it, not get out.
Where's your girlfriend, Rita?
She's out on the floor.
And the warlock boy?
He got drunk on us, so we left.
Oh, that must have been a touching scene. The parting lovers.
Okay, chum, on your way. You're beginning to bore me.
We're practically gone. Oh, by the way, lad, do you own a pair of gray suede gloves?
Maybe. And maybe not.
Well, your eloquence is touching. Come on, Betty, let's go. We've done enough slumming for one day.
I wonder what you think you're up to, Jonathan Pierce. First we go and visit that gambler Lance Norman, then we rush over to this apartment house and walk up the stairs, and there's a perfectly good elevator to ride up in.
Lance Norman's apartment is on this next floor.
Oh, it is.
We didn't find the blackmail evidence in Clip's apartment, so now we're going to look in Lance's. There we are. Oh, see if the skeleton key works.
How do you know there isn't somebody in there?
Lance lives alone in the apartment. It's dark. I look from the outside. Now, don't bother me. There. I got it. Okay, in you go, dear. I don't think we'd better risk turning on the room lights. We'll use matches to see how...
Who turned on that light?
I did. Just take it nice and easy, both of you, and this gun won't go off.
Lance, Norman...
Jonathan, I thought you said there wouldn't be anybody here.
Oh, I'm wrong. Go ahead and sue me.
Well, not so smart, are you, Seamus? I figured you'd come prying around my apartment, but you didn't get anything out of me at the club. Too bad I got here first, huh?
Okay, so you got here first. What do we do now?
What we have to do, Seamus... You know, it's too bad you both look too young to die.
You mean you're going to shoot? Oh, no, 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 please, not that. Jonathan, I think I'm going to faint.
Hey, turn them lights back on.
Please, Mr. Norman, don't shoot. I didn't mean to turn out the lights. It was just that I almost fainted, you see, and I bumped into them, and I'll turn them right on again. Only please don't shoot. I don't want to die, Mr. Norman. I don't want to die.
I don't know what I said. Let go of me. Let go. That was nice work, Betty.
Thank you.
You can turn the lights on now. Our friend won't bother us anymore. Oh, boy. Come on, now. Let's search the place. You take that side of the room, and I'll take this.
Johnson, what did you say the name of that girl was?
Huh?
Rita Dane?
Yes, why?
Well, I think I found something there. There's a marriage license here made out to Lance Norman and Rita Dane, dated 2 years ago.
Good. I found something, too. Come in here, Betty.
Oh, what is it, Jonathan?
What we're looking for. Look. This was in an envelope with Warlock written on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a photostat of two sets of fingerprints exactly alike. And a newspaper clipping from an out-of-town paper dated 2 weeks ago.
Well, what's it say?
I'll read the clipping to you. Martinville, New York. Sometime last night, thieves broke into the Martinville Third National Bank and made off with more than $10,000 in cash. The thieves left no trace behind them except a small metal case which probably held some of their tools.
Mm.
Fortunately, the Martinville police were able to get a clear set of fingerprints from the case. They have not yet been able to identify the prints.
A bank robbery.
Yes, and one set of prints on the photostat is labeled prints taken by the Martinville police. The other set is labeled fingerprints of Freddie Warlock, and they're identical.
You mean that the son robbed the bank? Oh, Jonathan, maybe he's the one who murdered
I'm beginning to see a lot of things I didn't see before.
Oh.
We're going over to the Warlock house, but in a hurry. Come on.
Hello, Pierce. Did you tell Mr. Warlock that Mr. Jonathan Pierce is here?
You may go in, Mr. Pierce. You'll find everyone in the library. The priest, too, sir.
The police?
Yes, sir. I believe they're about to leave and take young Mr. Warlock with him, sir.
What?
He's been here quite some time.
Come on, Betty. We've got to hurry.
Jonathan, my boy, you're just in time. This fool policeman insists upon arresting my son.
Well, if it isn't Jonathan Pierce.
Hello, Lieutenant Valley. What's happening here?
Well, it's like this, Pierce. We got a phone call tipping us Clip Matson was murdered.
Oh?
We investigated. In Matson's pocket, I found a photostat of a story about a bank robbery up in Mortonville. And proof that young Freddie Warlock pulled the job.
Huh. Pocket, though, that's where it was.
What's that?
Oh, nothing, nothing, Lieutenant. Go on, please.
I got the idea that maybe Clip was blackmailing the kid and the kid bumped him off.
But how could I kill anyone I didn't know, huh?
Of course he didn't do it. The whole thing's stupid. Freddie was with us all afternoon and dead drunk when we left. Weren't you, Freddie?
Sure. Lieutenant, you've got some pretty flimsy evidence, haven't you?
You think so? We gave the kid the paraffin test and it showed traces of nitrate on his hands.
Oh?
That proves he fired a gun. So I'm taking him in.
Utter nonsense.
I wish you'd wait a minute, Lieutenant. I think I can clear up a few points for you. With the help of Mrs. Lance Norman.
What do you mean, Mrs. Norman? It's Rita Dane.
I'm sorry, Freddie, but it's Rita Norman. She and Lance were married 2 years ago.
That's right, and I saw the license.
And with the help of Clip Matson, they've been trying to blackmail you.
What?
You'll find another one of those photostats in Lance's apartment.
You can't prove a thing.
Good work, Jonathan. I knew you'd do it.
Look, Pierce. You think Lance did the killing, too?
No. Lance didn't do it.
Who did, then? The kid?
No. The killing was done by my client, David Warlock.
Why, Jonathan,
what kind of nonsense is this?
No nonsense at all. Warlock's been handling the inheritance of Freddie, and I suspect you find it short.
Well,
Freddie was due to collect in 6 months, however, so Warlock thought of framing him for killing Clip Matson.
But how did he know this blackmailer would show up?
Because he planned it that way. He robbed the bank in Mortonville and planted Freddie's fingerprints on the scene. Then I imagine he thought to it that his evidence was placed where Rita and Lance could get hold of it and pass it on to Clip. The blackmailer was to be killed and Freddie framed for it, and I was called in for window dressing.
It's got an utterly fantastic story. Fortunately, no one will believe it.
Jonathan, it sounds awfully pad.
Well, certainly it's pad. It was planned to be a way to eliminate Freddie. A crime to fit the punishment.
I don't know. What about the paraffin test on the kid?
Simple, Lieutenant. The kid's drunk and out cold. So all Warlock has to do is take some dirt, rub it on the kid's hand, and there's your traces of nitrate.
That's right. You got any proof of the rest?
Well, the motive should be easy to check. Warlock made a slip today about being in Mortonville. Then I imagine you'll find a pair of gray suede gloves in Mr. Warlock's room, and the gloves should show traces of nitrate. Finally, Warlock was the only person who knew I was going to meet Matson.
Very clever, Mr. Pierce. But let's see if you can outsmart this.
A gun! Just like in the movie.
Now look, Mr. Warlock.
Shut up. Get away from that door, Lieutenant. I'm leaving.
Oh, Jonathan, I think I'm going to faint.
What, again?
Of course you don't.
Oh, yes. Go right ahead. I'll catch you.
What is this? Your trick,
oh,
you...
No trick, Mr. Warlock. I just can't stand the sight of a gun. Oh.
Turn those lights back on.
Like this, Mr. Warlock? Okay, Betty. Light, please.
Coming up.
Holy smokes, Warlock is out cold. The gal faints and Pierce conks Warlock. A very nice trick.
Well, think nothing of it. We do it twice a day.
Yes. Well, I think that clears up your case, Lieutenant. And as for you, sweetheart, you asked me a while ago for a job as my assistant. The job is yours.
Your assistant? Are you kidding? This detective works such a cinch, I'm going to business for myself.
And there you have A Crime to Fit the Punishment, tonight's performance in a mystery playhouse. How did you come out, huh? You put the thing on the right guy? No? Oh, don't be discouraged if you didn't, because the only people who consistently get the right answers are the ones who write them. Well, speaking of writing, don't forget that we still like to hear from you. Just address us, Mystery Playhouse, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. While we are on the subject, I'd like to say a word or two about theming. I just finished reading a few facts that I'd like to pass on to you. Did you know that your V-mail letter has priority over all other mail? That's right. The only mail that always flies. It's never delayed or left behind because of lack of plane space. So it looks to me like a smart thing to do is for everybody to use it all we can. Firstly, since use of V-mail definitely helps shorten the war. Oh, I almost forgot about our trip to the green room. Come on, we better get down there right now and get none of our next Mystery Playhouse performance.
The record of famous charlatans and frauds is cluttered with the names of those who have earned their living by pretending to be psychic. And there are men, like Mr. Harry Price, who have devoted their lives to exposing the fraudulence of that claim. But even Mr. Price himself has never been able to solve the riddle of the woman named Eileen Garrett, the woman who knew things which no living person could have told her.
It was dawn on the morning of October 5th, 1930. In the skies over the town of Beauvais, France, the British dirigible R-101 was cruising through a heavy fog. Those early risers who chanced to be in the streets of Beauvais saw through the heavy mists the vague, cigar-shaped outlines of the dirigible as she moved lazily along her course. And a moment later, they witnessed the sudden and terrible catastrophe. It was over in an instant. The R-101 was now but 1,000 fragments of burning wreckage falling earthward. An investigation was ordered to determine the cause of the dirigible's tragic fate. It was conducted in great secrecy, and finally, the officer in charge of the investigation prepared a report, a highly confidential report.
There can be no doubt, sir, that the R-101 and her crew were the victims of gross incompetence on the part of those responsible for her construction. Her elevator jammed as the result of the use of faulty materials, and our much-vaunted combination of carbon and hydrogen, which we have kept so secret, proved to be not only a bad fuel, but a highly hazardous one. If the truth
and thus,
should be revealed,
the true story of the crash of the R-101 became a military secret of the First Order. At least, that is what the investigating officer assumed. But one night, after he had returned to London, he dropped into a tavern for a glass of ale. Sitting at the bar beside him was a man engaged in earnest conversation with his drinking companion.
Gross incompetence, that's what it was. Here, what they were using for fuel, some fool combination of carbon and hydrogen.
The officer put down his glass and tapped the man sharply on the shoulder.
May I ask your name, sir?
My name? Why, it's Garrett, that's what it is.
I'm very much afraid, Mr. Garrett, that I'm going to have to order your arrest as a spy. The information you were imparting to your friend is a military secret. Heaven knows how you laid hands on it.
I can tell you how I laid hands on it, sir. I got it from your wife. She's what you might call psychic, sir. She told me all about the R-101, only it wasn't her talking. It was the voice of Lieutenant Irwin talking through her.
And then Garrett proceeded to describe how 3 days after the crash of the R-101, his wife had claimed to be under the control of what she called an entity, the disembodied voice of the late Flight Lieutenant H.C. Irwin.
Useful lift too small. Elevator jammed. Gross lips, badly computed. This exorbitant scheme of carbon and hydrogen absolutely wrong.
Every fact included in the officer's confidential report had come slowly and haltingly from the lips of Mrs. Garrett. And to this day, no amount of investigation has disproved Mrs. Garrett's claim that she had obtained her knowledge from the dead flight commander. A claim incredible, but true.
Every door has a key. The key to every situation. Behind every unopened door, there is a mystery. And the opening of this door introduces us to another in the series, the key.
get 90 years out of me then. 90 years, honest. There, soft shoes. That's what you give a lovely surprise. Well, come back in here. It's like a Turkish bath in there. You can sit down and read something while I have my bath. It won't be long. Oh, and guess what? Well, just have a guess. Go on. Well, I bet you can guess anyway, so I'll tell you. A.B. rang me, you know? A.B., my agent. Well, he rang me, and he's got me a honey of a part in the Saul Kellman's new show. And guess what I'm going to be? That doll Lady Godiva yet. Imagine, me, all hair and a horse. Well, what's the matter? I think it's terrific. I thought you'd be keen on it, too. Why don't you say something? What's the matter? Cat got your tongue? Hey, what's eating you? Look at the quilt.
Yes, can I help you?
You're Mark Sampson?
Yes.
Halliday, Special Division Homicide. This is Sergeant Brand.
You're here about Martha.
Mm-hmm. Mind if we come in?
Not at all. I've been expecting you. I stayed at home today because I thought you'd want to see me.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down, Lieutenant. Sergeant?
Thanks. Been living here in this block long, Mr. Sampson?
5 years. Nearly 5 years, that is. I came here in...
5 years. What's your work?
I'm in the film business. Editor. I work for Vision Incorporated.
Good job?
Sure. I've got no complaints.
Mm-hmm. You knew Martha Wills pretty well?
You must know the answer to that already, otherwise you wouldn't be down here.
All the same, you tell me, though.
Sure. Yes, I knew her well. I started knowing her well 3 years ago. That's just after she came here to live in this block.
3 years? Had you thought of getting married in that time?
To her? Yeah, sure. I asked her to marry me. Once. She turned me down flat, and though I was sore about it at the time, I was glad later.
Why?
Well, Martha was cute. She had all the looks, but not much on top. I guess I was carried away by the face and figure when I popped the question, but later, you know, the cold light of dawn routine.
But you were still friendly with her?
Sure, why not? I used to see her every so often. It suited her, it suited me, so...
How often?
Couple of times a week, maybe. That is, until recently. She got some other guy in tow, and she started to ease me out, but I didn't mind.
When was the last time you saw her?
Maybe, 3-4 weeks ago.
Not last night?
Hmm? You haven't got any idea of pinning her death on me, have you?
I just asked you whether you saw her last night.
No, I didn't, and I object to this. I'm no murderer.
This yours, Mr. Sampson?
Say, who gave you the right to go to my car and
get... Go to your car?
Sure. I always keep my driving license in the glove box, so it'll be around when I need it.
You admit, then, that this is your driving license?
Got my name on it, hasn't it? Can't be anybody else's. But before you went poking around in my car, you should have shown me you had a search warrant. I know my law well enough. You're supposed...
This wasn't found in your car.
Hmm?
You found it near Martha Will's bath.
What? Ah, you're kidding me.
Not this time, Mr. Sampson. The tape is still sodden where some of the water slopped over the bath down to it. I think you'd better come down to headquarters with it.
Your girl's murder is caught. Hector, read all about it. Police action charge your girl's murder. Read all about it.
Thanks. Good morning, Mr. Sampson.
Hello.
How are you feeling today?
Okay, I guess. Sorry, I can't offer you a better sleep, Mr. Blake. You'll have to make do with the other bunk, as usual.
Oh, for Pete's sake, when is this farce going to end? When are they going to realize that they've made a mistake? I didn't kill that dumb little
girl. Easy
man.
Now.
Easy? How the devil can I be easy? I'm charged with bumping off Martha. And I couldn't leave a chair for me. How can I be easy about that? Would you be easy?
Mr. Sampson, I'm here to help.
Okay, but for the love of Mike, stop telling me to be easy about it.
I'm sorry. Well, obviously you intend to stick to the story that you're innocent.
Of course I'm innocent. Look, just what sort of a lawyer are you? Why are you trying to make me confess all the time? Confess to something that I didn't do? Are they paying you, the cops? Are you working for them or for me?
For you, naturally.
Well, in my book, it doesn't look like it.
I'm just trying to get the complete truth from you, Mr. Sampson. I must have the whole truth if I'm to handle your case properly.
You've got the whole truth. I can't be any more truthful than I've been already.
All right. We'll leave it at that.
You still don't believe me. What sort of a crummy lump are you, Blake? What do you want me to do?
Well, what the heck else can I do?
Nothing. If you've given me all the facts.
Oh, great day. Okay, boy, you go ahead and help me on my way to that little room. I guess you'll help them get everything over and done with quickly anyway.
You can always get another lawyer, Mr. Sampson, if you're not satisfied.
I'm just too nervy to talk today.
The time is set for tomorrow, of course you...
You think I've forgotten that? Gone, Peter!
Maybe I'll be better by tomorrow once the trial's underway, but once all this waiting is over, I'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye.
Well, you're looking a little better today, I must say.
I'm all right. Why all this wait now?
Oh, be patient.
Patient? Oh, Mr. Blake, you kill me, boy. You really kill me. Why do they have to let all these goons into the place? Look at them back there. The public. They think this was a three-ring circus.
Oh, don't let them worry you. Just ignore them.
Well, maybe this is better than a seat at the movies. This is flesh and blood. There's always something about flesh and blood, don't you think? That intimacy between audience and performer? Ah, they're a pack of creeps.
Oh, they can't be kept out. If they want to come in, well, it's a public courtroom.
Who's that guy over there?
The prosecutor.
That's the big wheel, huh? Who is he? I've seen his face before.
Marvin Clark.
Marvin Clark.
What's the matter now?
No, I was just thinking. He's the guy who hasn't lost a case yet, right?
Was there a first time for everyone?
He looks kind of sure of himself.
He generally does. But don't let that worry you either.
You're just one great, big, happy, walking tranquilizer pill, aren't you? And what else needn't I worry about? Should I ignore the verdict, too? When the judge tells me they're going to shoot a few thousand volts through me, should I break into a broad grin about that?
If you are innocent, the prospect of a verdict shouldn't worry you.
Who do you think you're trying to fool, Blake? What does it matter in this place if I'm innocent or not? Everything's stacked against me, even you.
That's nonsense.
You say. When am I going to start? When will I get off their fat...
Shh!
You're going to punish me enough that they have to lay it on even more?
Please, Mr. Sampson.
Silence in the court. Silence in the court.
Well, your waiting's over now. This is it. Let's see where we go from here.
I don't know. It doesn't look like a murderer to me.
Hmm?
Fred?
Hmm.
I said he doesn't look like a murderer to me.
Who doesn't?
Well, this Mark Sampson they've got in for the murder of that girl.
What girl?
The beautiful blonde drowned in the bath girl. That's who. Don't you follow your papers?
Not murders. There's not the back to that. What happened to all of my music is on a book.
Oh, aren't you ever interested in anything that's happening? Can't you ever get your nose out of those books?
Well, you should read this. Good. Gracie, maybe here and there, but good.
The blonde in this thing could do with a spot of Duncan in the bath, I can tell you. Yeah.
No. Well, if I was his judge, I'd let this Sampson man off. I really would. He's got too nice a smile to be a murderer.
Hmm?
Anyway, it's probably good riddance that someone threw her in the bath. From the evidence they've been printing, she was just a hussy, that's all. All those men in her life. Huh. Yeah, I thought it was exciting and lots of fun. But look what it brought her. That's always the trouble with women who try to get some excitement out of life. They always end up getting the worst of it.
And in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, in conclusion, this has been a long and tiring trial. For nearly 2 weeks now, you've heard evidence dragging on and on. You've heard the testimonies of witnesses, denials, admissions. You've heard enough courtroom oratory to confuse even the most astute legal brain. But one thing remains clear, and I would point it out to you again in a brief summary. A, the accused's driving license was found in that bathroom. It has been established beyond any doubt by the police scientific department that water was dropped onto it at the time of the murder. B, the accused has no alibi at all to account for his movements on the night of the murder. He says he stayed in his apartment by himself and watched television. Well, that's what he says. C, from the evidence given, we have seen that the accused had a motive of jealousy in regard to the killing. He objected to the deceased seeing these other men and ignoring him. And in a fit of passion, he decided on this drastic course of murder. There is only one verdict you can bring in, ladies and gentlemen. Guilty. Guilty of murder in the first degree. This ends the case for the prosecution.
Counsel for the defense?
The defense rests, Your Honor. Blake! What else can be said? We summed up our case. It'll only be a case of reiteration.
You're going to let that jury go up there remembering those words?
I tell you, there's nothing more we can do. Our case is just as convincing as the prosecution's.
That's not good enough for me. Wait a minute, I've got something to say.
Sit down, Sampson, please sit down. You'll only spoil everything we built up.
You built up nothing. Listen to me, I'm innocent of this charge. Do you hear? I didn't kill her.
Silence. Silence. The accused will sit down and remain seated.
But you must listen.
Your Honor, I must apologize to my client. His nerves are shot to pieces.
Well, do you wonder? Put yourself in my place. Any of you in this courtroom.
Silence. Sampson, you fool. This is the way you'll get to the chair. Now shut up.
You mustn't believe Clark. Please, you mustn't.
The accused will be removed from this courtroom.
Out of the way, bud. Let's get a shot of this.
What's that, mister? Hey, you, Sampson. Look up. Let's see your face.
Oh, shut up. Leave the poor devil alone. Come on, Sampson. You have to leave the court. Take my arm now. Come on. You'll be all right. We'll get you to another room and you'll feel much better.
Yes?
They're waiting in the court, Mr. Blake. Can you come back inside now?
Mark, we have to go back inside now. Mark?
Yeah, I heard. Okay.
Go on, stand up.
Sure.
Boy, whatever they've decided...
Don't talk to me anymore. You've talked enough. There's been too much talking all around. Let's go.
Accused will rise and face the jury. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached your verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
How do you find the accused?
We find the accused guilty of murder in the first degree.
Help him! Help him there! He's passed out!
What's the matter, Emily? Not eating.
I've just been wondering how you can.
Oh, no. Thought you were over all this nonsense. Poor old Emily. You should never let my business affect your personal life so much. Or your appetite. I'll have a little more meat, I think.
As long as you have to do this sort of business and influence juries to bring in verdicts of guilty, you'll tear my stomach.
You're a fool, Emily. Nothing more than that. A weak fool. Samson was guilty. As regards the verdict, well, I didn't make it. The jury did.
You made up their minds for them. You always do.
Oh, that's an idiotic thing to say. You're implying that the jury on the Samson case had no right to be on the stand.
Who has any right to decide another human being will die?
He decided to kill one. It'll be fair that he should be punished appropriately. There must be a balance, you know. And the old eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth principle is a very good one. It stood the test of time.
Yes, Marvin.
And don't start on that tone again. If you had any sense at all, you'd agree with me. Now, may I have the meat, please?
Sorry. When is the execution to take place?
A week from now.
A week? Poor devil.
You dispense your sympathy in the most unusual directions.
Do you think he was guilty, Marvin? Do you really think
that... The law says he is.
I'm not worried about the law. I'm asking you what you think personally.
Very well, then. Personally, I don't think he's guilty.
I thought so. Then why did you work so hard to get him convicted?
Because it's my duty. It's my job.
And you still wonder why this sort of thing turns my stomach.
Now, listen to me. There have to be prosecutors as there have to be defense counsel, just as there have to be murderers. It's all most unfortunate, but as long as human nature is built the way it is, we'll see all three. Oh, really, you're a very dull woman, Emily. You must be logical about these things. If I became emotionally affected about every case I won...
Maybe you don't. Might make you a little more human.
If I'm so inhuman, if I disgust you so much, you know the course to take.
And ruin our children's lives? No. I'll still stick it out because of them, Marvin. I won't divorce you.
Then you'll stop talking so much nonsense in that case.
Don't you? Can't you feel anything at all when you hear that sentence? And when the day comes, when it's time for him to press down that switch, can't you feel anything then?
I just asked you to stop talking nonsense.
Oh, dear heaven.
The only thing I feel, Emily, is disappointment in you.
I have no doubt under the circumstances. You've created it.
Have I? There are plenty of women who'd give the world to be in your place. I'm successful. I'll be even more so in the years ahead. I'm not at the top yet, you know. There are a few positions above this that I'll be taking before I'm through.
If you only had more sense while I was younger.
Yes, you wouldn't have married me. Oh, that's always a great old favorite, isn't it? But the trouble is, you've never had any sense. You never will. And if the question, then why did you marry me, is forming in your mind once more, let me save you asking it. I married you because you're a suitable decoration for my position. Now, anything more?
I'm going to my room.
Good night, my dear.
You're quite sure there's nothing else you want to say, Mark?
No, Father, I said everything.
It's hard for me to say this, my boy. So little time left now. Tomorrow morning...
I've still said everything I had to say.
You know, Mark, you'll have a higher court to face soon. It'll be easier to face if your confession is complete on earth.
Please, please, go away.
I'm sorry. Perhaps I should leave you now. I'll be here again tomorrow morning.
Father! Father Burke!
Yes?
Forgive me. Will you please come back here?
Of course.
Father, give me the Bible.
What?
Now do you see what I'm doing? I'm holding it in my hand. I'll have to face everything this book stands for soon. Knowing that, I'd hardly lie now, would I? Well, what point is there in lying? One way or the other, it wouldn't do me any good now. But look, Father. I swear on this book that I did not kill that girl. I swear it.
Well, maybe you can pray for me, Father. That might help. I believe you, Mark. I believe you now. I'll see what I can do straight away.
Father.
Samson. Some good news for you. A phone message has just come through from the governor. Some new evidence has come to light. You'll be granted a reprieve. 1 week.
Yes, Lieutenant Halliday, you wanted to see me.
Sorry for the intrusion, Mr. Clark, but I wanted you to know we just unearthed some new evidence on the Sampson case.
What?
Just by sheer chance. I got on the job straight away. They granted Sampson a reprieve.
Oh. Well, he's a lucky fellow.
Uh-huh. By the way, I wanted to return these, too. You left them in my office this afternoon.
Oh, my keys. So there they are. Well, thank you, Lieutenant. I was wondering what on earth had happened to them.
Yes, I thought they were yours, sir.
Hmm?
I'll take them back now, if you don't mind. Grant, Harlan, in here.
Why, what is this?
It's all to do with a key, Mr. Clark. This one, remember it?
Wait.
Yes, I see you do. Unusual design, isn't it? I couldn't help noticing it when I saw your keys lying on my table. I'd have thought a man of your training would have removed such a valuable clue.
Why, what's so strange about that key? It's an unusual design.
It's unusual enough to be a duplicate key to the front door of Martha Will's apartment. Odd you should have a key to her place, isn't it?
Well, I can explain.
I hope you can. Oh, and someone has just remembered seeing you nosing around Samson's car on the night of the murder. I guess that's when you got his driving license. Also, someone remembered seeing a gray-haired man leaving the apartment block that night. They didn't take any particular notice of you at the time, but one little thing stuck in their mind. It was a hot, dry night, and the front of your suit was splashed with water, as though you'd been in the rain or something. There's plenty more on top of this, but I think we'll talk about that back at headquarters. Come on.
And, of course, Clark was working on the old principle that once the case was closed by your execution, it couldn't be opened again. It was a perfect crime, so he thought. Out of his position, no one would suspect him. Well, you can see the way his mind worked.
Mm. The martyr had found out who he was, and he was afraid the time would come when blackmail would enter the picture.
Exactly.
Blackmail would never have entered Martha's head.
Well, it's all over now, Mark. Clark will get what he deserves, and you'll get the same. Compensation and freedom. You have the freedom now.
Not quite.
Huh?
When the guard opens this door in the gate and lets me through, then I'll have it.
Good luck, my boy.
Closing door finishes the story. Next week, another key will open another door to another story.
Mystery. Romance.
Or adventure. All start when a door is unlocked by...
the key.
That's going to do it for our show today, but I'll be back tomorrow with a new episode of Case Closed and the Horror Replay, which you can find at RelicRadio.com, along with this show, past episodes of it. You'll also find links there to our forum, our live shoutcast stream, and everything Relic Radio. It's all linked to from there. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday for a new episode of the Relic Radio Show.